Metis bitte. Für das Wörtchen machen kann. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as the mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sound, sound, sound. So as we're saying towards the end there, having clarity of vision. So in Buddhism we have a thing called the seven factors of awakening. And so whenever the five hindrances are arising, so the five hindrances are our usual experience, which is like sense desire, so desiring after sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, or thinking about them, ill will, or you're getting angry at sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, or thinking about it, dullness and drowsiness, where you're kind of falling asleep. Restlessness and worry, it's like where you're perpetually thinking or worrying about something. Or doubt, you know, oh, am I meditating? You know, is this the right thing? Do these people know what they're talking about? You know, so usually our mind has this default of doing these five things. And so there's actually one of the factors of mindfulness is called Dhamma Nusati, where it's like recollection of Dhamma. And in that recollection of Dhamma, it has different contemplations of truth. And one of them is contemplating the five hindrances. So if you're meditating, you're like, wow, the hindrance of restlessness is arising at the moment. No, the hindrance of doubt is arising at the moment. And so that's still wisdom. You're still actually meditating. Even though you feel like it's terrible, you're noticing with mindfulness that something bad is going on in the mind. So you're teaching your mind that this isn't good at the moment. You know, the mind isn't good. So you still have mindfulness. So it doesn't have to be that we're always sitting there perfectly content and still and nothing happening in the world. But the more we meditate, the more we apply ourselves to mindfulness and clear comprehension, then this starts to become a default. And then meditation becomes easier, and then we get access to like peace and joy. And if we have a certain amount of practice we do every day, then this becomes a foundation in the mind. And then what happens is instead of the five factors, the five hindrances arising, called nivarana, the five nivaranas in Pali, you have the five factors of awakening, the seven factors of awakening arising. It's like sati, mindfulness, wirya, energy, dhamma vichara, investigation of dhamma, and piti, like rapture or joy, samadhi, which is like firmness of mind or stillness of mind, and upekkha, and one more. and the point is, so whenever the hindrances are suppressed, and then one of the factors of awakening are arising. And some people, you know, they're just going to apply themselves to meditation continuously, and they'll get there in the end, because mindfulness will always develop. But the way the Buddha taught, so if we have dullness and drowsiness, for example, well, maybe we shouldn't be developing tranquility, because if we develop tranquility, we're just going to fall asleep. So maybe we develop wirya, maybe we develop samadhi. So wirya is energy, sorry. So it's like you can use a bit of wisdom to develop the factor of awakening that's like opposite to that. And then somebody who's kind of a wisdom approach, Sariputta, who was the right-hand disciple of the Lord Buddha, he said it was like wearing a king's clothing. Like in the morning, a king would wear one set of clothes, and in the middle of the day he'd wear another set of clothes, and in the evening he'd wear another set of clothes. And it can actually get to the point where these factors of awakening are like that. So you can develop joy in the morning, you can develop equanimity at lunchtime, and you can develop mindfulness in the evening. So they become literally like, rather than being this turbulence of hindrances, we can actually be like directively developing factors of awakening. So it's just like one musician, one of the world's best musicians, I was listening to an interview of him once, and he practiced 9.5 hours every day, including weekends, like every day from, you know, when he became serious about it, every day of his life, 9.5 hours. And if he had a performance, then he'd do his usual 4.5 hours before the performance. So it's like, I think the problem with our meditation and mindfulness is we have to be kind of serious about it. It has to be something that we see that the hindrances are a real problem. And so that's where this vision that I was saying earlier comes in. Because it's like when we have the hindrances arising, it's like it's spiritual darkness. It's like we can't see clearly. And then the factors of awakening, they're like factors of vision. You know, because we have access to all of these wholesome qualities. We can actually, you know, our will develop tranquility or peace or joy or equanimity. Because a lot of our problems come from us believing the stories of our mind. You know. And if we take on all the suffering of the world before we've dealt with our own suffering, we're just carrying the world on our shoulders. And so a lot of the problems that we have are because we're going outside. You know, we're pointing fingers at other things in the world, and we're not pointing back this way. And with this kind of modern day mindfulness movement, because it's a little bit lacking because it doesn't have the teachings of the Buddha in there. And so when the Buddha would teach, it's not just present moment awareness, but it's reflecting on our actions. It's like before we do an action, our body, speech, or mind, we should reflect on it. While we're doing an action, we should reflect on it. After we do an action, we should reflect on it. Because that's how we're going to learn to do good actions. So even if it takes us 2 weeks before we remember to reflect on our actions, then we can go, well, that was a pretty bad 2 weeks at reflecting on my actions. You know, so maybe, but we have this idea in this world that, you know, the body is such a good thing, that people want to be attractive, they want to go to the gym. But how many people want to develop their minds? How many people want to see clearly, like have spiritual vision, where they can solve their problems, where they're not? You know, where death and change and difficulty and adversity can be accepted without, you know, without crying out, why me? Because that's what our mind does. When the moment some change comes in our life, if we're not prepared for it, then we not only have that difficulty that arises, but we have all the mental suffering that comes with it. And my brother's a Christian missionary and I'm a Buddhist monk, and my mother was quite sick when I was growing up, and she ended up with brain damage when I was 13. And so when you have challenges in your life, it can be a source of growth. If we don't have challenges in our life, if everything comes easy, then we just keep putting off, you know. We can look for those things that are on the surface, you know, that are easy to get, but what about those things that are hard to see? You know, when are we going to take the time to develop them? And so that's where this kind of spiritual vision, this idea of developing our wholesome qualities, and in the short verses of the Buddha called the Dhammapada, there's two verses, and it's like evil actions we can gather like a jug filling up drip by drip, or good actions we can gather like a jug filling up drip by drip. And so if we just say example, we apply that to our meditation, the more we practice, eventually the jug will overflow and we'll have some peace, you know, or we'll have some joy. Or have some silence in our heart for a while. And then the more we do that, the more those kind of, we have those experiences of the jug overflowing. And so it's not that we have to be perfect, but it's just this attitude where we're continually going to try. And by trying, then we're gathering towards that goodness. So it doesn't matter if, you know, half of our life is in chaos. If we choose to gather slowly in a good direction, then we're going in the right direction. You know? Because some people have great spiritual parami. They've practiced lots in previous lives. And some people have very little spiritual parami. But that's okay, you know. It's like, it's just about where we are at. And nobody can practice for us. You know, we have to look after our own mind. And, you know, even if enlightened beings, and there are beings with great spiritual power in the world, nobody can practice for us, you know? Just like nobody can eat for us. and so it's like the food for the heart, though, is difficult to see. So it's like, when are we going to... It was one spiritual teacher said to me once, it's like if you talk a lot, it's like eating potato chips all day long. Now, you can eat and eat and eat. If you do that for long enough, you're not going to be very well. And the same is with idle chatter, you know. If you just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, by the time you go to bed at night, you're going to have a headache. And then, if we don't learn to restrain our actions outside, then how are we ever going to restrain our actions inside? And so a big part of the teachings is, you know, learning to gather towards quietness and silence, and learning to appreciate, you know, the forests, the quiet places, monasteries. And then, you know, when we have a chance to seek out these things, or, you know, when I was a layperson, I just had a little spot next to my bed where I would meditate. And that was all that was I did in that corner. Of course, my cat would come and try and climb on me when I was meditating. But still, I'd sit there and meditate. And I tried to do it in the morning before things, you know, other people woke up and things. So it's just, we just make use of our experience. But sometimes, you know, you can't do it. Like the other day, I was coming back from Andrus, so my meditation was on 2 train trips. But, you know, you just make do. That's just what it is that day. I was still very peaceful. And so if we practice enough, then, no, it's just things happening around us. If we're closing our eyes, if we're being peaceful, that's good enough. Now, it's only our mind that goes outside and gets involved with the hindrances that makes problems. So if we have enough mindfulness, then we can practice anywhere. And then, and also, like, even say driving the car, we don't always have to have the radio on. Or, you know, when we're catching up with people, we don't always have to talk. And sometimes, you know, just learning to appreciate silence. And of course, that comes also with practice. But the more we apply ourselves to the meditation and to the mindfulness, then we start to see that, you know, the sacrifice that we've taken to develop these things, you know, pays off exponentially. Because then, when basically the mind going outside, is in Buddhism, is called a thing called the asavas. So it's literally the word outflow. It's like a train track going out of the mind. And what we're doing when we're trying to meditate is we're trying to bring all the trains back into the station. And they're not sending things outside. So it's like this process of, oh, the mind goes off, bring it back. The mind goes off, bring it back. Mind goes off, bring it back. Mind goes off, bring it back. And then eventually, if we do that enough, then we can start to, instead of the mind going off, the mind can be with the breath, or the mind can be with the present moment, or the mind can be with the mantra, or whatever one's preferred meditation object is. And I used guided meditations, like a little MP3 player. You just have like a few of your favorite guided meditations on there. And then anytime you don't feel like meditating, you can just listen to the guided meditation. But better to have a separate MP3 player than a mobile phone. It's less, at least it doesn't have anything else on it. Because people are so busy these days, you know. You can't go 5 minutes without carrying their phone with them. But I don't think the world is going to stop if we don't answer a phone call. And I like Ajahn Chah. His wisdom's great. You can find collected teachings of Ajahn Chah online in audio and in book form. And he was one who's liberated through wisdom. And his teachings are really profound. And he would say, like, when you meditate, to have the attitude, like, so it doesn't matter if you're in a room full of people. It doesn't matter if you're in a busy place. Just have the attitude that the whole world vanishes, you know? Like, now is the most important time to meditate. As if everybody else vanished, this is the end of the world, and you just had some good karma, and so you got a bit of extra time to meditate when nobody else did. So you got some chance to be peaceful, to be calm. Doesn't matter what anything else happens, now that's just the time to meditate. You know, so somebody can come and scream in your ear, and you're just going to sit there and meditate. And that's a nice attitude, because then it's literally like, if the world did vanish, you know, well, you know, what would we have to do right now? You know, did we forget something in the oven? Well, the oven doesn't exist. Well, I don't need to burn your house down, but you know what I mean. So the idea is to have that attitude means that you can let go and put things down. And then, and these become like skillful means. And so sometimes when I meditate, I have different means of meditating. So it's like, you have a thing called sense restraint. So you can go through the senses and just tell yourself, like, see, because the mind goes out to seeing. So, you know, I'm not going to like and dislike seeing. You know, I'm not going to like and dislike hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. Just going to keep the mind neutral. Just going to be here peacefully with my meditation object. And if the mind goes off, I'm just going to remind myself that now is not the time to get caught up in the stories of the mind. And so meditation is a time where we're learning to be one-pointed. And then it's eventually that one-pointedness that allows the mind to see the mind. And then the mind starts to become more luminous and bright. And that luminosity, that feeling of ease of the mind seeing the mind, because it's no longer going outside, that's what gives rise to the peace and the joy. It's like an otherworldly kind of happiness. And when we have access to that kind of peace and happiness, that's the time where then we have the power of mind to contemplate, because the mind won't shrivel when we contemplate. And then we can start to see, you know, change in the things in our lives. Because in Buddhism, when the Buddha sat down to become enlightened, it was on the eight worldly winds. And the eight worldly winds are success and failure, gain and loss, fame and defamation, and pleasure and pain, or sukha and dukkha. So pleasure and pain, sukha and dukkha is like when we go out seeking happiness, or we don't want suffering. Gain and loss is when you had a house and you got home and it got burnt down. And success and failure is when you had the best job in the world and you got rocked up the next day and you got fired. Or whatever it is, you know. So these are just like the worldly winds. And the thing is that if we're not prepared for them, when they come, you know, we attach to one and we're averse to the other. And then so we suffer. Or the body, you know, we didn't have any pain and then we got a terrible sickness. And then so we're like, why me? And so the Buddha had these contemplations, like the five regular reflections for lay people. But really we need a bit of joy and happiness before we can like start to contemplate these things. But the Buddha was quite, like for example, if you see a sick person, a mind that's not trained will quite often have an inner sense of like revulsion or humiliation. And they see a sick person, so then you would change that reflection. You say, well, you know, my body too is of the same nature. It can be like that. It hasn't gone beyond that. Or if you see a dead person, you see, my body too is of that nature. You know, I am too of that nature. I can be like that. I haven't gone beyond that. But to do these contemplations, you know, you already need a strength of mind. And so I think in the Buddha, we'd usually teach like the recollections, the Buddha, the Dhamma Sangha, of the sila, generosity, or the five quality of the devas. Because they're very close to breath meditation, but there's something you can think with your mind. Like the five qualities of a deva are like sada, which is like faith, sila, which is like moral precepts, great learning, the one who really can learn a lot, generosity, chaga, learning to give, and wisdom. And so a being who develops those five things will become like a heavenly being. And then that particular recollection is that those beings, when they were in a human realm, and they practiced those things, that led them to them being a heavenly being. And so, and then you look to see if those qualities are in yourself and then try and develop them. So there's like these six recollections. And so the idea being is that meditation is more than just sitting down and being quiet. It's seeing how our mind is and what is a wholesome tool that can be used to develop it. And so if we're particularly miserly, then we should learn to give. If we're angry, then we should learn, you know, to have like universal love. If we're super sleepy, then we should learn to wake up early. Or whatever it is, you know, we just look at ourselves and then try and work on one thing. And then that ability to develop determination and ability to develop good qualities, that pays off. Because, you know, day after day, week after week, the days and nights are relentlessly passing. But if we slowly chip away at things, then, you know, those little actions, they amount to a lot in a very short space of time. And you know, I've seen it in my own life. I was only in 2009, I had suicidal depression, and then I decided to, you know, turn my life around. And a few years later, I was trying to develop a spiritual documentary, and then that led me into kind of researching all different religions, and next thing I was in the Buddhist monastery. So it's like that wholesome intention. For me, I realized for myself, it was better to be a monk, because in a monastery, as a monk, the conditions are there for you to be able to practice all the time. So even if you practice a little, I would have practiced more than I did a layperson. So I thought, well, there's really no other solution. As a lay people, it's quite hard, because you've got a job, you've got family to look after, and you got a cat that's climbing on you when you're meditating. Yeah, I could still do it, but it was just a matter of, for me, that level of commitment was just something that was natural to me. But at the time of the Buddha, there was, in one city alone, there were 600 stream winners, which were lay people, so sotapannas. So it's not that you can't practice as lay people, and the path of fruit is still open, but it's just about that willingness to choose to develop spiritual wisdom over momentary happiness of the senses. And so traditionally they had the moon observance nights, and so you have the full moon and the new moon, and then you have the half moon days. And so you go to Thailand and Buddhist countries, and you see lay people going to the monasteries on those days. And so they would have, like, even if you didn't practice much during the week, you always have this one day where you would kind of go to a monastery and you'd have a kind of special effort in your practice. I think that's a nice kind of standard, like having a day a week of the weekend where, you know, you just put things down. That's a day to be quiet, that's a day to focus on practice. And then you can't get caught up in too many things, because people say, you know, oh, what are you doing on this day? Sorry, that is my special day. Yeah, I think that's a nice idea. So then, you know, you have 4 days a month where you know no matter what, you have spiritual practice. And that's actually an ancient thing, because there's like a universal Dharma which goes, that people kind of tap into even when Buddhas aren't around. And so this moon observance things, many beings who are gods in their previous lives have practiced these moon observance days. And the most refined way is where you do the 8 precepts. So as a layperson, you usually have the 5 precepts. But then you would do the moon observance days where you would not eat after noon, where you wouldn't be involved with singing and dancing and shows, where you wouldn't have a high and luxurious bed, and you abstain from sexuality. And then and that level of restraint creates huge levels of good karma. And then the Buddha also would always talk about generosity. And so why he would encourage lay people to give to the monks and nuns is because the monks and nuns rely on the lay people. So when food and requisites are given to the monks and nuns, then whatever good actions those beings do, you get to partake in that merit. And, you know, if one lady didn't give a meal to the Buddha one day, he would have died just before he became a Buddha, because he was practicing austerities and he became so thin that he fell over and he passed out a few times. And this lady was on the way to giving a milk rice to a tree deva, and found the Buddha there, and gave the meal to him. And then that was the kind of the beginning of his practicing of the middle way, where he gave up these austerities because he realized he was about to die, and that wasn't the right way. And that's where he found the middle way, which is the path of neither luxury or deprivation. So we're not here to torture our bodies, but we're also not here to totally indulge our bodies. And so we have to see, like an angry person, You know, maybe they need to have a bit of extra nice food. But a greedy person, you know, maybe they don't. So it's like really depends on the person. So you can't judge another person. You can't look at another person because we don't know what their defilements are. You know? So for an angry person, just holding their tongue, you know, that's a huge thing. And you know, not saying something out of anger. You know, it's really difficult for a person who has an angry temperament. But for somebody who doesn't have an angry temperament, they can't understand the angry person. They're like, oh, why do they have such a problem? And the whole process of meditation is just kind of learning to look into our own hearts and see these things that are flowing out into the world and slowly trying to overcome them. And then the more that we practice, then the more this jug of kind of goodness will overflow. So I think that's enough talking. We'll do a little meditation. If you just get yourself in a comfortable position, a sense of being upright and alert, comfortable and relaxed. See if the legs and the hands and the back, position of the body, feel reasonably comfortable. Coming into the present, putting down the past, stories of the past, the thoughts of the past, letting it all go. In the future, whatever may or might happen, just give it all up. Coming into the present, just this sense of neutrality and peace. We don't have to react to our inner world. Relaxing the toes and feet, the ankles, spreading up into the lower legs, up towards the knees. Relaxing the knees, towards the thighs. Relaxing the waist and the weight of the body onto the seat or the cushion or the floor. Relaxing the belly. Being aware of the rise and the fall of the belly. Relaxing the belly from inside out. Belly rises with an in-breath, falls with an out-breath. We're just slowing down, learning to be more present and aware. Quiet awareness of the belly rising and falling. Nowhere to be, nowhere to go, nothing to do. Relaxing the lower back and spine, spreading up the spine, relaxing the middle back and spine and the sides, spreading into the upper back, spine, shoulder blades, all the muscles, tendons, everything there, the nervous system, letting everything settle and relax. All these micro muscles relax, spreading into the shoulders, out to the tips of the shoulders, the upper arms, elbows, lower arms, under the arms, on top of the arms, the wrists, the palms of the hands, the back of the hands, the fingers and the fingertips. And from the belly, relax the diaphragm and the solar plexus, letting go of any tension, any worry, restlessness, concerns or doubt, letting go of everything. And relaxing the chest, the upper torso, the lungs, the heart, letting go of any lingering difficulties. Just content with things as they are. As the heart relaxes, just become aware of the lungs as they fill up and empty, filling up with an in-breath, emptying with an out-breath. Aware of the lungs filling up and emptying. This natural process of an in-breath and an out-breath. Not asking, not being demanding. Content with things as they are. Allowing and being friends with. As the lungs fill up and empty. Limbs, you might notice the breath is both relaxed, also energized. Natural energy. Energy that balances the faculties. Relax the neck. From inside out, everything inside the neck. Might want to stretch the neck a little, opening the spine that passes through the neck, all the muscles of the neck, so the neck's relaxed and comfortable. Relax the chin, the lips, the tongue, down to the root. Might notice a slight smile at the corners of the mouth. Just become aware of the breath. Is it at the lip or the nostrils? Breath comes in on its own. Breath goes out on its own. That's why the breath is such a good object. It's always with us. Any time we can always tune into the breath. Very grounding. Relax the cheeks, the jawbones, the teeth, the gums, the lips, the nostrils, the ridge of the nose, the sides of the nose, the upper cheeks, the bags under the eyes, the eyelids. You might notice a slight smile at the corners of the eyes and the eyes themselves. Eyes of wisdom, eyes of peace. See if we can give our full attention to relaxing the eyes. This tendency to be agitated, to be dull, to doubt, to go outside. We can relax the eyes right now. We don't have to go anywhere. Relax the eyes deeply. Coming fully into the present. Relax the eyebrows, the temples, and the forehead. All the lines of the forehead begin to vanish. Any lingering tension evaporates. Relax the top of the head, centering the spine comfortably, the whole of the head, sense of luminosity and ease, and luminosity and ease in the chest. And then allowing the breath to spread fully through the body. As if we're breathing in from the pores of the body, the whole of the body, comfortable and at ease. Good enough. Sense of fullness. Fullness breathing in. Sense of fullness breathing out. You can take up whatever your normal meditation object is. If you're undecided, some people like watching at the nose or at the lip, the roof of the mouth, at the heart, the solar plexus, the rise and fall of the belly. Some people like to follow the flow of the breath in and out. Just choose a means for watching the breath. Seems suitable to your temperament. And then we're aware of just one in-breath. Aware of just one out-breath. If the mind goes off or reacts to something, we just know that. Smile kindly. Joyfully let go and return to the meditation. No need to be upset. Aware of one in-breath, breathing in. Aware of one out-breath, breathing out. just like a dear long lost friend that we haven't seen in a long time. Our heart kind of swells with kindness. Have that sense of friendliness to the in-breath. Sense of friendliness to the out-breath. It's like this total awareness just to one in-breath. Total awareness just to one out-breath. There's no judge or jury. Let go of any stories. Total friendliness with the in-breath. Total friendliness with the out-breath. Like a bird stuck in the nest. Good to be here right now. Let the whole world vanish. Total friendliness with the in-breath. Total friendliness with the out-breath. All embracing friendship. Total friendliness with the in-breath. Total friendliness with the out-breath. Awakening to presence. Awakening to kindness. Encouraging this quiet seclusion, this friendly allowance. this friendly awareness. See if we can be aware of the whole of the in-breath, the whole of the out-breath. Maybe it's feeling, its temperature, its texture. Something might interest us. This point of contact. Or just the sense of friendliness. See if we can saturate the in-breath with this friendliness. Saturate the out-breath with this friendliness. A joyful letting go. Relinquishing any lingering disturbances of mind, just smiling at them, seeing if we can gladden the mind, gladden the heart. Breathing in easeful peace. Breathing out an easeful peace. Like we've come out of the desert of suffering and we're in an oasis, peaceful and at ease. Breathing in an easeful peace. Breathing out an easeful peace. Sense of gratitude. Friendliness, ease and peace. Either unshakable peace or unshakable stillness. Breathing in unshakable peace. Breathing out unshakable peace. Breathing in unshakable peace. Breathing out unshakable peace. Profound and deep, breathing in unshakable peace, breathing out unshakable peace. peace deepens. Fullness of peace. Breathing in unshakable peace. Breathing out unshakable peace. See the fading away of difficulties in our heart. And this peace saturates our mind, saturates our heart. There's a cause for all difficulties and suffering to fade away. We can fully enjoy the peace of an in-breath. Peace of an out-breath. We can be here right now, without a care in the world. Take the time to see how the heart is after half an hour of meditation. Is it more peaceful? Is it more relaxed? Is it less agitated? Is there tranquility or energy, joy or peace? Equanimity or a sense of ease? And what were the causes? What were the means? Is this something we can develop on our own? May we take this feeling, however much we developed, we take it with us into our lives. We share a sense of goodwill with ourselves and all beings everywhere. Sadhu, sadhu. May all beings be happy and free from suffering. That's the end of the meditation. End with a little chant. And let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and paths of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Little blessing.
Bhavatu sa pamangala rakantu sa padevata sa pabuddha nupavena sada soti pavantu te bhavatu sa pamangala rakantu sa padevata Sapadamma nupavena sada soti pavantute bhavatu sapamangala rakantu sapadevata sapasangha nupavena sada soti pavantute.
Thank you all for coming. Safe travels.